encourage you to open up your Bibles to Acts 11. We'll be looking at that passage together this morning. Happy New Year to everyone. And I was thinking, what a great passage to look at to kind of spur us on to what we need to be as a church, as part of God's kingdom, to do His will. Acts 11, and we're going to be looking at the church in Antioch, is a unique passage in the book of Acts in the aspect that we're kind of zeroing in on a church that focused on the Lord, and you see the Lord blessing that congregation or that group of people. A lot of good things we see in this passage. We certainly will not hit them all this morning, but I want to highlight a few things that we see in this passage that we can try to emulate, that we can try to see. They did that very well. How can we be doing that better? How can I improve in this area in my walk with the Lord? So this church shows us how a church needs to act. It shows us the mindset that we as members need to have. And one of the most exciting things to me about this passage is it shows us what God can do, which is super exciting, right? What He has us to work with and what we can do and add what we can do with what the Lord can do, and great things, right? Great things can happen. So a really exciting passage for me to look at. But before we jump into Acts 11, I thought it'd be helpful just to kind of look at the beginnings of the church as we look at kind of the first part of Acts up to chapter 11. So in chapters 1 through 5, most of the persecution, if not all of the persecution that has happened in the church, is really zeroed in on the apostles at this point. Remember Peter and John, in chapter 3, they raised the lame man at the beautiful gate near the temple, and some people didn't like that, so they put them in prison, and the next thing they know, Peter and John are out of prison preaching in the temple again, what got them in the prison in the first place. And then later on in chapter 5, we see kind of all of the apostles were kind of put in prison and put before the Sanhedrin. And God did a wonderful, powerful work in them. And then in chapter 6, Stephen, you remember him, where he was one of the seven that was chosen to take care of the widows that were being overlooked. And he proclaimed the gospel in a very powerful way and kind of let the Sanhedrin know that you are acting just like your fathers were in persecuting those who were trying to follow the Lord. And they did not accept that teaching very well, so they stoned him. Let's look at that together. Because I want you to see how the beginning of chapter 8 flows right into the passage that we're going to look at this morning. Now, so looking at chapter 8, verses 1 through 3, and I'm going to be reading from the New American Standard Version. It says, Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him, being Stephen, to death. On that day, a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. Some devout men buried Stephen and made loud lamentation over him. But Saul began ravaging the church, entering house after house, and dragging off men and women. He would put them in prison. So notice the text kind of emphasizes that there was not a small persecution, right? It was a great persecution. And the idea of Saul ravaging the church, What kind of thoughts come into your mind when you hear of something ravaged, something else? For me, it's kind of an animal, right? An animal ravaging, just going in and tearing apart. Well, that's the idea that we see what Saul was doing to the church. And notice the text says he was dragging off men and women. That's not a pretty scene, right? And he would go house after house after house. Other texts say that he would try to get the Christians to blaspheme the name of Christ so that he could put them into prison. You think about, what if you were living kind of on the street and you saw Saul coming and knowing that eventually he was going to come to your house? He was upsetting families, possibly men and women who had children, dragging off to prison. And so the whole church was scattered. But they were scattered, and the powerful thing to me, and the takeaway that I get from verse 3, the dragging off men and women, putting them into prison, but they went about preaching the word. Look at chapter 11 and look at verse 19. And we kind of see kind of how this kind of flows from what we just read. So chapter 11, verse 19. So then those who were scattered because of the persecution that occurred in connection with Stephen made their way to Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to no one except the Jews alone. So they fled because of the persecution, excuse me, and they went about preaching the word. Now what got the people in prison back in Jerusalem? It was preaching the word, right? How many times do we let fear keep us from talking to other people about the gospel? And the fear that sometimes gets me is the fear of, well, he may look at me strange. Or he may think I'm kind of weird. The fear that they were talking about is persecution, physical persecution. But they went about preaching the word, and I think that's what was one of the powerful examples of this church. So look at verse 20. We're going to look at five examples that we'll take from this passage. And since it was already read for us earlier this morning, we'll just kind of go and highlight some things in this passage. So looking at verse 20, it says, but there were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene, who came to Antioch and began speaking to the Greeks also, preaching the Lord Jesus. Now, if you look at verse 18 as well, kind of the verse right before this context, is God was granted to the Gentiles also the repentance that leads to life. So not only did the people of this group just keep proclaiming Jesus in the midst of persecution, they said, we need to reach as many people as we can. And so they would go to the Greeks as well. Remind you of Romans chapter 1 and in verse 16, where Paul says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jews first and also to the Greek. How many times are we ashamed of the gospel? I don't think we would ever say that out loud. Patrick, are you ashamed of the gospel? Well, no, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Of course not. Are you apt, are you excited enough about the gospel to proclaim it to as many people as you can? They desired for everyone to hear the good news. You remember Jesus in John chapter 4 when he was tired and he was thirsty and he was at a well, and then up came a Samaritan. Not just any Samaritan, it was a Samaritan woman. And he asked for a drink, and she said, well, do you know who you're talking to? I'm a Samaritan. Jews and Samaritans, we don't get along. We're not even supposed to talk to one another. They said, well, if you knew who it was that was talking to you, you would be asking me to give you water. I'll give you waters that spring to eternal life. He said, oh, well, give me some of that. And if you look at what happened between Jesus and this woman, it seemed that Jesus just got more and more excited about teaching her about who he was. And the end of that story was, she was so excited that she went and told the whole village about Jesus, and the whole village came to hear Jesus and what happened to her. Are we willing to talk to anybody? Jesus told the man in Mark chapter 5 who had a legion of demons that was possessing him, who lived in the caves, and he got away from those demons and he cured him from that. And the guy said, I want to come with you. I want to follow you. And Jesus said, no, I want you to stay here. And I want to just kind of note what he told him. I want you to stay and report to them the great things that the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. I want you to stay and share and tell people what great things God has done for you. Isn't that our job? Isn't that our mission? Is to tell others what great, wonderful things that God has done for us. Who are we willing to share the gospel with? We tend to gravitate towards people who kind of are similar to us in some ways. We know that God desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of truth, 1 Timothy 2, verse 4. Would you ever thought Saul of Tarsus, the man who in some way started the church in Antioch because of the persecution in Acts chapter 8. Would you ever have thought, chapter 9 of Acts, that he would have made a good convert? God would tell Paul when he came to the city of Corinth, which was kind of sin city, sin everywhere. What God told him is, I have many people in this city. You know what I believe about Roswell? What I believe about Nashville? Or what I believe about in every city? That God would tell us the same thing. I have many people in this city. And I think if we were to take that to heart, if we were really to think about that, God has many people in this city. Therefore, go out and tell them what great things God has done for you. One of the aspects that we can take away from the church in Antioch is their desire to share the gospel with others. Notice verse 21, if you're still in Acts chapter 11. Verse 21 says, and a large number turned to the Lord. In fact, they grew to such an extent that news from Antioch spread all the way to Jerusalem, which was over many hundred miles away. And the apostles decided, well, we need to send Barnabas up there so that he can do his great work and encourage those to remain faithful. Barnabas probably knew some of them from Jerusalem who had fled Jerusalem to go back to Antioch. And Barnabas was a great encourager, which leads us to our second point. Verse 23, Barnabas went up there to encourage them to remain faithful to the Lord. Different translations are used in this verse, verse 23. He encouraged them with resolute heart, one version says. Another version says that Barnabas came and encouraged them with devoted hearts or with firm resolve to remain true to the Lord. And this is the attitude that we must have, right? Persecution is in the territory of being a Christian. If you're going to be a Christian, you will have persecution, right? That's what Paul says in 2 Timothy. I believe it is. But doesn't it help on our journey to get to that city where roses never fade to have a bunch of people to encourage us and to say, we need to stay with it. It's worth it. We can do it. We're in this together. And I think that's exactly what Barnabas does. What does this imply? That he had to go up there and encourage them with resolute heart, with firm resolve to remain true to the Lord. Doesn't that imply that it is possible not to remain true to the Lord? Think about the different soils that Jesus teaches us in the parable of the sower. Some seed fell on hard ground, right? They received the gospel with great joy, and some, with the rocky soil, they received the word with joy, but they didn't have any root system. And so whenever persecution came along, I don't know if this is for me or not, so I'm going to go away. Some fell among thorns, and they never produced any fruit. I appreciate the sentiments and the prayer this morning to let all the things of the world, all the distractions, let's get those out of our minds so that we can focus on what we need to focus on. And that's not just here for the hour or so that we're here Sunday morning. That is every day, right? That's all day Monday, all day Tuesday to get us away from the distraction so that we can focus on what we need to focus on. I think this is extremely important information to pass on for those, especially those who have just said, I'm going to follow the Lord, who have committed their life to the Lord. So, well, persecution's coming. Difficulty is coming. And how many of us can be like Barnabas and say, I'm going to be an encourager? I'm going to be looking for people who are down. I'm going to be looking for people who are struggling so that I can encourage them to remain true to the Lord, because that's the most important thing. We need people who are going to encourage others to stay true to the Lord. What does that look like? It's easy to say, easy for me to preach to you. That's what we need to do. But what does that look like? In some ways, that looks like our conversations need to be about the Lord, right? They can't all be about football or finances or whatever, the weather, whatever. Our conversations need to be geared towards, how are you doing in the Lord? How can I help you in the Lord? How can I help you follow the Lord or learn more of His Word together? And the more we share with one another, I think the better we are able to help one another. Well, they're growing. They're doing great things. They're preaching to the Greeks. They're preaching to the Jews. Notice in the first part of verse 26. Verse 26 is so good. I made 2 points out of it. So, the first part of verse 26 says they desired to grow. Notice the growth, in this passage. Verses 19 to 21. The dispersed Christians from Jerusalem desired to share the gospel with others. Look at verse 24. Barnabas joins them and considerable numbers were brought to the Lord. And then verse 26, Barnabas goes and gets Saul from Tarsus and they teach considerable numbers. What does this tell you about the church in Antioch? It tells me they were not satisfied when they got to a certain number. Antioch happened to be the third largest city in the world at that time. Rome was number one, and Alexandria in Egypt was number two, and then there's Antioch. And so they are just proclaiming and teaching considerable numbers because there was a ton of people who lived in Antioch. I wonder if sometimes we can have this mindset of, I really like a small group. Or I like a certain amount of people. You know, I don't want to get too big. Then we kind of lose the family feel of things. Whether we have kind of with a small group, we're kind of connected and we know each other so well. I don't want to get too big. Well, I wonder if Paul would ever say that. Or if Jesus would say, you know what, I think y'all need to slow down. You're getting too big. You're reaching too many people and you're just not having that family feel anymore. So maybe you should stop. Church in Antioch never had that. And I think that's an easy mindset to have sometimes. Let's pretend this building is full. What a joy that would be, right? Every pew is full and even people are on the front row. And we'd kind of say, well, we've reached our limit, right? Well, the church in Antioch says, let's do something. We need to keep reaching the lost. And that's the mindset. Our goal always needs to be share the gospel with as many as we can. Now look at the latter part of verse 26. And it says they were making disciples. I think this is really important, really helpful to zero in on. This probably reminds you of the Great Commission statement that Jesus made to his apostles. I want you to go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations, right? Well, that's what Jesus told the apostles to do, and that is what we are to do. We are to go make disciples. Well, what is a disciple? A disciple of Christ is one who loves Christ more than anything else. Remember, Jesus says, you can't follow me if you love your father or mother or sons and daughters more than me. You can't follow me. So a disciple of Christ puts him first over anyone else. And a disciple of Christ does their best to imitate Christ in their life. That's their goal. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me, right? That was Paul's kind of mantra in his life. That needs to be ours as well. When we teach someone the gospel, I think this is what needs to be in the forefront of our mind. Our goal is not to get you baptized as quickly as we can. Our goal is to make sure you understand that you are now a disciple of Christ. Are you ready to devote your entire life over to Christ? A great way to do this, I think, is to show them what does a disciple look like. And maybe you go through the Gospel of Mark or one of the other Gospels and show them what Jesus taught, what he expects of you. Help them count the cost. Is it worth it to give your entire life over to Christ? Well, let's think about that. That's a big decision. Paul would say, I'd count all these persecutions not even worthy when I consider the greatness of heaven. Notice it says they were first called Christians in Antioch. They were modeling their life and behavior after Christ. And I wonder, if you were to ask your friend or your neighbor who may attend church, and you may ask them, are you a Christian? And what's going to be their answer most likely? Sure. Yeah, I'm a Christian. Well, it's a lot more than being a Christian than just claiming to be a Christian, right? Being a Christian means I am devoted to Christ. I'm devoted to His teaching, and I'm going to do whatever He says. Saying I'm a Christian and living as a Christian are, of course, two totally different things. Notice verse 29, and the last thing that we'll talk about this morning, the lesson will be yours. And I think in connection with being a Christian, being like Christ, is a desire to help other Christians. There was this guy named Agabus, and he shows up and says, there's going to be a huge famine throughout the world, and it's really going to affect the Christians that are in Jerusalem. Now notice he said that there is a famine that is coming. In other words, famine it's not here yet. We're not affected by this famine, but we're going to be affected by the famine. And this famine is not just going to hit Jerusalem. It's going to hit the whole world. And Antioch would probably be included in the whole world, right? So in other words, here's this famine. It's coming. It's going to hit Jerusalem. And it's also going to hit you. But I tell you, there's folks in Jerusalem that are going to be really, they're going to suffer because of this. And so it would be wonderful if you could help those Christians who are going to suffer in this in Jerusalem. So the disciples gave money to Barnabas and Saul to give to those in Judea. Every disciple who could contribute financially did just that. Seems to me the same attitude that we see in Acts chapter 2 in verse 45 with the new Christians. And it says there that they gave as they might have need, and no one considered anything belonging to himself, but everything was common property. I don't know. I wonder if I have that same mentality. I need to. But so many times I can have the mentality of, well, I bought this with my money and it's mine, and I guess you can borrow it, but be sure to take care of it and then give it back to me in mint condition. I don't know if that's really the attitude I need to have. This is what God has blessed me with, and you can have it. It's just as much yours as it is mine. And when they knew that other Christians that they probably never met, never knew, they need help, what an opportunity, what a blessing that I can be like Christ and help others. A lot to learn and a lot to take away from this great church. I have one more slide for you, and I'll quit. I'll be quiet. What made the Church of Antioch kind of the exemplary church? Why didn't they go to the church that was started, one of the churches in Samaria? Or why the church in Antioch? Why was this kind of the focus? I want to notice with you, I think, the answer to that question. And I kind of have it there for you. Their focus was on the Lord. Notice verse 20. I'm going to run through these real quick. And notice the emphasis of the Lord in these verses. Verse 20, they were preaching the Lord. Verse 21, the first part, the hand of the Lord was with them. The latter part of verse 21, and a large number turned to the Lord. Verse 23, Barnabas witnessed the grace of God. And then in verse 23, Barnabas encouraged them to remain true to the Lord. Verse 24, considerable numbers were brought to the Lord. Why were they having such great success? Well, it's not because the Christians were so great. It's because God is so great. And because God was blessing them and God was doing the work. So we need to make sure that our focus is in the right place. And we can have the same success, I'm convinced, if we have the same attitude and the same focus as this church did here. Notice what they did. We need to preach the Lord. Needs to be our focus to simply and strictly preach God. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. We need to make sure we preach the whole purpose of God, as Paul did, as he said he did in Acts 20, verse 27. The mindset that Paul had, as expressed in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, when he says, when I came to Corinth, and when God told him, I have many people in this city, Paul says, I did not come with superiority of speech. Or I didn't come to impress you with my wisdom. Now, I'm going to take a time out and ask the question, could Paul have done that? Do you think Paul could have impressed them with his knowledge? I think he could have. Now, me doing that, that's another question. But the apostle Paul could have done that. He said, I didn't want your faith to be based upon your enamoration with me. Right? When I came, I purposed to preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And that's it. Because I wanted your faith to be based on the gospel. I desired your faith to rest on the power of God instead of on the wisdom of man. You know what's so neat about simply preaching the gospel and staying true just to the gospel message is we will turn people not to our doctrine. We will turn people to the gospel. Just like the parable of the sower, if we preach the gospel, people will respond to the gospel. Our goal is not to convert people to a local church. And we need to be very careful sometimes with our language and what are we drawing them with? Oh, you'd love to come visit us. We have such wonderful people. And they're so nice and they're so loving. That may be true. But wouldn't it be better to say, you know what? You should come and worship God with us. And we do our best to open up His Word and to study it together and try to do what He says. We're not perfect. We don't claim to be. But He wants you to worship Him. Why don't you come and serve God and worship God with us? You see how the focus is more on the Lord instead of with people. When people turn to the Lord, when we preach the Lord, people turn to the Lord. So we need to have that in the right order, right? We need to preach God so that people will turn to the Lord. And when people turn to the Lord, that's exciting, right? When they give their life over to the Lord, then what is our goal? I think our goal is then to become Barnabas. Be people of encouragement and to help them, to encourage them to remain true to the Lord. As I mentioned in 2 Timothy 3 verse 12, indeed all who desire to live godly in Jesus Christ will be persecuted. Persecution for living like Jesus is to be expected. Right? When Peter wrote his first letter to the Christians, he said, don't think it a strange thing that you're being persecuted. That's to be expected. And Jesus said to his apostles, if they persecute me, how much more are they going to persecute you? That is, people who follow me. What a great opportunity that we have every Sunday, every Wednesday, when we come together to encourage each other in the Lord. And that's what we're called to do. Consider how to stir up one another to love and good deeds. Our desire is to always make more disciples. It seems like they repeated this process again and again and again. They preached the Lord and people turned to the Lord, so they encouraged them in the Lord. And so they went and preached more. And this cycle just continued and continued and continued to the point where we send Barnabas up there, to the point where we need Saul of Tarsus. He'd do a great work here. That needs to always be our desire. Again, I believe God has many people in this city. And the question is not, are the fields white for harvest? I think we all know the answer to that. The question may be, are we going to be laborers in the vineyard? And that's what we need to be praying for, and that's what we need to be trying to do. Well, thank you for your good attention. Thank you for your kindness and letting us come and be with you. We have been looking forward to this day and appreciate so much the elders inviting us and the opportunity to be with you. It's always great to meet more of your brothers and sisters in Christ. So thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. Look forward to getting to know you a little bit better afterwards if you have time to do so. At this point, if there's anyone who needs to turn their life over to the Lord, if they need to do whatever you need to do to make your life right, we encourage you need to do that now. Don't wait another second. And if we can help in any way we can, please come forward as we stand and sing.